has been a grandson. I went up there to pick him up at school day up here at New Prospect. He got in the car, and before we got home, he was sound asleep. I had to wake him up to get him out of the car, out of the truck. He said, "Papa, you know why I went to sleep?" And I said, "Why? I had to get up early this morning and go to school. This last 2 weeks that they've been off, he's been staying up late, but he stayed up late last night. And I told him, I said, you better go to bed, boy. You got to go to school in the morning." So he was wore out when he got home this afternoon, Chad. You talking about that damn tire pole. Mine, the balum got water in it. And I got it out here rolled up and got the cap off of it. I'm going to take and drill me 3 or 4 little weep holes in that thing. And my daughter's son-in-law, he ain't no kin to me. That sucker, I seen him have three different jobs in a week. And him with 3 kids. But he come over here Saturday. And I'm out there looking at the end of that dipole up in the tree. He said, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to figure out how I can get it on up there higher. He said, heck, Paul, I can climb. I dropped that thing down on the ground, and he took it up with him, and he got it on up there about 30 feet higher than what I had it. I ain't gonna say I ain't gonna talk mad about him no more, but I appreciated what he done, Chad. KO4NUE, K40IM.
I've been practicing with my slingshot. I saw Gary use his, and I decided I was gonna try to build me one, so I did. Yeah, it didn't work out too good. I still got some things I need to do on it to straighten it out, but I'm not happy with it. I can do just fine if I use a fishing rod, you know, stick the fishing rod on the ground or stick it in the ground and then slingshot. I can do pretty good with it, but I built one and put the fishing rod on the bottom of the slingshot, and it's not right. But I'll figure it out. It's always trial and error, I guess. But I'll get it figured out. It's got this 80 meter dipole up here. I built. I put it up here to Deer Cabin, and it's with the slingshot and the fishing rod, and I did real good with it. And then last week I come up here and took the 2 meter antenna down, trying to get into one of the repeaters that I just could never get into it. That didn't work either, so I took it back down and then put the Slim Jim that I built, that one of them I built for Andy, and he couldn't use it, so I kept it and I put it up down here, and when I put it up, I was able to get into the repeater. I gained the repeater I wanted to get into, but I lost, I think it was Greer or maybe Spartanburg. I lost it when I put it up, but, you know, hey, I got the one I wanted, and it's working. That's what I'm talking on now. As a matter of fact, that and 5-watt handy talkie, is there any noise on it?
I'd never known you were on the HT. No, there ain't no noise on the chat. That thing, it sounds just like your base station.
FT-65, I believe it's 65, FT-65, handheld, and I got a adapter coming out of it onto the, straight up on the Slim Jim, so, I mean, I'm pleased with it. It does what I want it to do, so, if it does what you want it to do, I don't guess you need to complain about it.
Sounds fine. KK4JBQ, Larry, are you in here?
JBQ, I've been here all the while.
Anybody out? How does that radio sound to you? I would never believe it was an HT.
I'll give it this. I'm using an HT right now, and the same antenna. And it's the best I've ever connected to this radio. However, I had a little difficulty getting into the thermal belt net. Chad can verify that. So it behooves me to get my 857, my Yaesu 857D in operation, because I can put a little more power into it. That will matter somewhat, but this is the best antenna all around that I've ever had connected to this radio. I can breach the Anderson net, and I've never been able to check into that before this time. I can hear Mount Mitchell again. It's a real pleasure to use. I'll just have to say it that way. KK4JBQ.
KI4LZI, you in here, Andy? If not, you pick it up, Chad.
KO4NUE. So, yeah, it's like I said, Chris come down here and helped me put it up the other day. And I'm feeding it with some LMR400 coming out of the cabin up to the top of it. And I won't say it's up there about 50 feet, I guess, 40, 50 feet, but I'm in a pretty bad hole here, and I don't know, last 6 or 8 months I've been trying to hit this one repeater and just couldn't do anything with it. I mean, I can hear it, but I just kept trying to check in and never would, you know, acknowledge that I was trying to check in. But I'll have to put that Slim Jim up. I'm not sure why I lost the Greer repeater or Spartanburg, whichever one it was. But I was able to get Stump House and WX4PG, I believe, what it was. But, I mean, if that's what I'm shooting for, I got it. So, I'm tickled to death with it. It ain't the prettiest antenna in the world, but hey, beauty's only skin deep, but ugly's to the bone, right?
Hey, but I've seen some. I'd like the skin to find out.
I'm happy with the Slim Jim. I got no complaints with it. I can hear really well with it, and like I said, I'm on a 5-watt handy tonight, and I'm not gonna complain with that at all. But I tell you, I guess all antennas just big lightning rod, I guess, but. Boy, you look at that big honking thing sitting up on the poles up there, and boy, you can just hear it saying, "Hey, strike me, strike me," you know. But it is what it is, you know. You got to pay the piper, I guess. Go ahead, pick it up, Larry.
But that lightning got it because, well, you're probably in the custom of disconnecting when you leave to make sure that that doesn't happen in your absence, running on your equipment. Yeah. I do remember, maybe 2 years before Ray passed, K4SUG, he had lightning strike an antenna. I think it was that the lightning was attracted to the antenna. It struck the antenna, but then it went laterally and struck his house right at the kitchen. And it came in and blew everything out of the kitchen. I mean, it ruined everything and caught the kitchen on fire. Now, Ray is a volunteer, had been for years, volunteer fireman. So he knew what to do. A lot of people, it burnt their house down. But Ray knew how to put this out, and he put it out. They got a new kitchen out of it. Of course, it was insured. But the way he described it, it was just, I don't have his words, but he said it traveled over, almost 200 feet, parallel with the ground, and struck his house. Lightning will do some of the strangest things, and it's just best if you're going to leave the deer camp, disconnect everything.
KO4NUE. Now you're right. I don't leave any communication gear up here. I made a patch panel so I can, you know, just screw a short piece of length of coax into the patch panel and to the back of the radio, and then when I leave, I take it with me. But I got the ICOM out there in the truck, but I was going to go to the meeting tonight and knew I wouldn't be able to get up on HF, so I just said, well, you know, I'm going to try this handy and see how that works tonight. And if it's a little bit noisy, just as long as Walt can get my call, that's all that matters. But, you know, so I don't leave any electronic gear up here because I'm bears. I just, you know, I don't want nobody messing with my stuff either, but I don't leave anything connected.
Especially good. I wanted to go back and revisit the fan dipole. I read, I think it was an article that I found in the RSGB. It's the Radio Society of Great Britain. Their magazine that's similar to our QST is called RADCOM, RADCOM. And it's kind of, it's a different thing to read, and there's not as many pictures as there are in the QST. But the fellow was describing, and he was quite good at description, he was describing how he tuned his fan dipole. And he made a good point that I think I should repeat here, is that the antenna needs to be tuned at the height that it will operate, which complicates the issue of trimming it. Yes, it is a chore to trim it. There is a capacitive reactance between the elements at any height. So what the point he was trying to make is that he rigged up kind of a winch or pulley system. So he built the antenna, and the longest span, of course, is I think for him it was 60 meters, because he tried 60, 40, and higher, So that was kind of a long span. But that was the one that had the most structure. And then he put a pulley higher up than he was going to suspend the antenna. And he said I had to pull it up to height and then check the SWR. And bring it down and pull it up, bring it down. He was doing that all afternoon, pulling that up. Well, if it's suspended on a vertical like a tree, you know, and that is your tallest support, if you hope to have this at the deer camp. I have heard of people putting it on a fence, which is probably no higher than 8 feet. You know, you're only going to get NVIS performance out of an antenna at that height. And then some people put it on a pole next to their house. A pole supported, if it's right up against the house, and you have the ground holding the bottom, of course, and then you have some support at, say, the roof line, that qualifies as being supported at 2 points. So you still have to be, in that case, on the roof and bringing it down and trimming it and putting it back up to check it. Well, yeah, it is a bit of a bother. KK4JBQ.
That's exactly what I did. I had 3 pulleys. I had one up in the center of it at the apex, and I had it up in an inverted V. But the ends of it, I still had a pulley on each end. That way I could just drop each end of it down and trim it and then pull each end back up. But I'm trying to think how long this one is. I believe it's, seems like 93 feet or 102 feet long. And you get tired of walking back and forth from one end to the other one. Well, you gotta stop the center, go in there and key the transmitter up, check the SWR. They are aggravating, but man, once you get them working, they are working.
Hill 4 NUEs. Yeah, I think I'm gonna give it a shot. I've got my pulley system rigged up out here at the base, but no pulleys or anything up here, so. The one I got at the house, it's pretty, I mean, I can have a dipole up and, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes, I guess, maybe 10. But I'm gonna give it a shot and see if I can do something with it. Plans look pretty simple, you know, it's a lot of, there's a paragraph or two of there on tuning it. You know what? They got specific instructions on what to do on you know when you tune one band, what happens to the band above it, and you know how you go back and rectify that. But I mean, it's pretty laid out as far as you know how to do it. And I just, you know, figured I'd give it a shot. I mean, I'm happy with the dipole I got. I am, but I'm willing to try something else. I think that's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna give it a shot and see how it goes.
BBQ. Well, I'm with you. I think if you had the stamina to keep making the small adjustments, you don't want to overshoot. You'd be putting up new wire. If you had the stick to it to get that done, you will have an antenna. The top band, the band that's on top, the lowest frequency, will will be a flat top, pretty much. And then all the rest of them, the way it's constructed, is some degree of inverted V, just as the thing works out. Because the spacers that you put between the band, the wires making up the next band, those spacers are critical to get it far enough away so that you minimize the interactance between the wires on the adjacent bands. And the very bottom one, it can't be less than 90 degrees between the two wires. Because, as you know, that in making an inverted V, you don't get any less than 90 degrees between the two wires. But once you get it done, you've minimized the losses that you would have in, a trapped antenna. Because every one of those traps is a bunch of capacitive reactants. In every one of those traps, you have losses. But this is clean and pure, and they don't interact with each other that much if you space them right. Well, good luck with it. I really like to hear how it goes. KK4 JBQ.
Let me make sure I got it. I'm gonna give it a shot. KO4NUE. I'm gonna give it a shot. You know me. I'm gonna just stick my shovel right in it. That's the only way to do it. That's the only way to do it, as far as I'm concerned. Is that right, Walt?
I stuck my shovel in it a bunch of times, and sometimes it didn't come out smelling too good. But you learn a lesson. I'm constantly experimenting with antennas or one of these radios. It was like I said earlier, I got that old DX302 on there, and I had to use some, I don't know if the parts had ever been used or not. They didn't look like it. There's in a box of circuit boards he had started building up, and they work for now. But that's one thing about ham radio, Chad. If you get to experiment with antennas or whatever, boy, it gets in your blood, you just can't quit.
4NUE. So I don't look at scrap metal the same anymore. You know, you gotta figure out some way to make it resonate. Hey, do it, you know, give it a shot. And just try to have fun with it, you know. As long as you don't do anything to harm the radio, then I'm gonna give it a shot. But sorry about that. Other than that, it's a pretty good day, I guess. And I'm gonna head back tomorrow sometime. I got some projects in the shop I need to try to take care of. And probably go in town tomorrow afternoon, run some errands and a couple of things in town I gotta take care of too. But the other thing I was gonna tell you, Walt, was and Larry too, was that me and a couple of club members have been working for past, I don't know, maybe 3 weeks, I guess, on doing two meter packet stuff. And we've been trying to do, you know, peer to peer for about 3 weeks, and just have not been successful. Just been a struggle. But we were able to do it the other day. And that's pretty neat, you know. There's nothing like voice now, don't get me wrong. You know, you get a lot with voice, but that's pretty neat to be able to, you know, have a chat session on your computer and, you know, watch the radio, you know, computer takes over the radio and, you know, boom, it's gone. And you're talking right back and forth like we are now. It's just written, you know. But I don't know, something like that fascinates me. I just thought it was very interesting. So we've been sending, you know, test messages for the past couple of days to get things tweaked, but we finally got it straightened out, finally got it working, so we're excited about that.
Well, I am. Well, Chad, I hate to rat somebody out, but I had to today. This guy had a listing for Kenwood TM7 dual band mobile unit, 2 meter 440. Pretty good price on it. And I contacted him, and he told me, I asked him if he'd take PayPal or Zelle. And he messaged me back and told me no, he didn't have an account for me to go to Walmart and get Walmart gift cards. I said, well, let me get off here, I'm heading that way. And quick as I got off the computer with him, I went back to QRZ website and reported the sucker. And they took his ad down almost immediately. I might have been bored at night, but it wasn't last night. I'm not buying something, paying for something on the internet, but gift cards?
KO4NUE. Yeah, you gotta be careful, Walt. There's a lot of scammers out there. I don't know the full story there, but you gotta be careful, especially anything doing with money. Just people do anything to, you know, most people, you know, some people would rather, you know, go out of their way to be harmful rather than, you know, just do the right thing to begin with and make it easy and not do, you know, bad things like that to other people. But I don't know, Walt, some people just can't do it for some reason. But I guess that's just the way it is. Go ahead and pick it up, Larry.
Walt, you made me think of just how PayPal got started. It was, maybe some dozen years or so ago. It was started by eBay. Well, maybe not by eBay. It was maybe bought out by eBay because it was used it was the primary method of payment on eBay at the time. And I think they did. eBay bought the thing, and now I believe it's solely owned by eBay because it is sound method of payment. And even if this guy was on the up and up, when it comes to money, you have to be beyond a reasonable doubt. You know, no appearance of being fraudulent. You can't be apologizing while you ask people to accommodate your pay method. Yes, PayPal takes a percentage, but then so does practically any other method of payment. Credit cards and money orders, you know, you pay for those to be issued also. So everybody got comfortable with PayPal. You do have to jump through some hoops. I don't know. Are you jump through hoops to make the transaction with your cell phone number and all kinds of things?
Larry sent me a text about 2 months ago that they were changing the way they verify your transaction. I was on my desktop with this guy about that in Kenwood, I paid my dues. I had to re-up with the ARRL, and I was going to pay for it through PayPal. Well, PayPal told me to check my cell phone for a text with a four-digit number, and then enter that four-digit number on my desktop before they would approve the transaction to the ARRL. Is that what you're talking about, Larry?
Talking, it's two-step authentication. That's, I thought of what they call it. Well, that does require a little more understanding on your part. Some years ago, PayPal issued little dongles that generated a random number. So when it came time to make the payment, the number that you put in was one that came up. It was like a 6 or 8 digit number that came up randomly, and you put that in, and somehow they knew that what the number was. Somehow they knew what to expect, because I have read it wrong or hit the wrong key or something and it didn't go through, and you get another chance, maybe just one more chance to put it in correctly. And so this two-step authentication is a pretty sure thing. No one can pretend to be you and use your PayPal account. That's good assurance. I never put money in their bank as such and withdrew it, or I never actually sent to another PayPal user. You know, it's always been through something like eBay or, it's being used for a lot of things now. But you can't do that. You can't send people money. You can deposit a certain amount in that account. They were doing this before Apple Pay and a lot of the others caught on to, well, you know, I think they earned something like 7%, which is, maybe that's not any higher than a credit card. I really don't know the details there. Finally, we got started talking about this. I guess I was just curious. KK4JPQ.
4NUE. I don't want to cut it short tonight. I really don't. But I'm starting to show my tired. I'm give out. So, yeah, I enjoyed the talk. Just want to let both of you know I met Andy tonight, and that was just a real pleasure. Like Larry, like you said, it was a real treat. So, 73s to both of y'all. 73, I'm sorry. I'm going to clear on out and secure my station for tonight. KO4NUE, and I'll be clear.
I will assure you that you will always remember meeting Andy. You'll always remember that. Everybody that I've ever talked to, he is a character, he is a gentleman, and when Andy decides he's going to commit something to memory. He's got a memory like a bear trap. And I like him. I mean, besides all that, I like him. Andy, if you're sitting back and listening to this, I apologize for being right out there with it, but, you know, it's the truth. Chad, you get a good night's rest. You had a big day. And Walt, you get a good night's rest, won't you? Because you're still healing, sir. You need plenty of rest to heal. I'm going to get on out of here myself. I try to turn in a little early. I've been keeping up too late these past few nights. I guess it was the holidays or something. I didn't go out and do anything, but I did stay up later. And that's caught up with me. Everyone be... everyone have a good day tomorrow. How about that? KK4, JBQ. Good night.
KO4NUE. I've enjoyed it, fellas. Really have. Be looking forward to doing it again next week, if not before. So I'm going to grab my flashlight and get up there and get between the sheets myself. So with that, I'll say 7-3, God bless, and good night. K4OIM, I'm clear.